It's my pleasure now to introduce Tal. Go ahead.
Thank you, Judith. I have a question. This is my first time in a UK meeting. Not that it makes much difference in Zoom, because we all go everywhere. But how many of you are in the UK, if you don't mind me asking? Okay, some of you are not on screen, so
I think there's one. Yeah, okay. I think thumbs are going up.
My daughter spent a semester in the UK when she was in college, and it was quite some time ago, but this is our first trip to the UK. And then there were many after that. But I'll never forget that time because it was an awesome time, and I discovered I had family in the Lake District that I had no the same last name, everything. So we would go back again and again for family reunions in the Lake District, and it was just great to learn about life in the UK and with my family members. So I'm Tal. I'm happy to be here. I'm an Al-Anonic. I have several addictions, but I do not have a substance allergy, which many of us in this program do have. And when I hear alcoholics and addicts share, and I listen to their allergies, and I listen to the rest of their life, not just their allergies. The rest of their life is just like mine. The delusions, the illusions, the fear, the resentments. I relate to all of that. And I didn't come to learn that until BBA, but that's a great distinction, or I should say a connection with the alcoholics and addicts that pervade our meeting, really. So I have a family of four. Two of them are alcoholics. I'm grateful for that today, but I certainly wasn't grateful at the time. I'm not an atheist, and I'm not an agnostic, and I know that's our topic today, one of my favorite chapters in the book. But I have been detached from God my entire life. Detached, meaning I never thought about God. I never prayed. Yeah, when I was a kid, I went to church a few times, but that didn't stick, and my parents weren't really into that as much as some of our parents have been. So as a detached person from God, let me say one thing. In our salad days, our family salad days, we lived in New Hampshire, and we had just moved there, and our daughter was born there in New Hampshire. So we were just a young family, and we had no friends because we were just new. So we went to the Unitarian Church just for the fellowship. And we learned to love that church. I mean, there was no spiritual dogma. It was all about love and acceptance and service to those who were less fortunate. I was a guitar player at the time and a guitar teacher. And I would play in those services. I'd do the interlude between subjects and speakers. I'd do a little guitar interlude. And I taught group guitar in that church. And on special occasions like Halloween, I would take the kids up to the belfry, whatever it was. I would take my guitar and I would tell them scary stories that I would learn from Harry Nilsson, Abby Yo-Yo. I don't know if any of you know that, but there are several scary stories that kids would be scared about. And I would go up and I'd play guitar and I would accompany myself to those stories. So we were pretty invested in that church. And I think now, when I look back on that, that our program is much like that church. It's just just what we preach, acceptance and love. So Unitarian Church was a good start for me, but of course, I left there. I quit my job in Boston, and I actually moved back to my hometown, Pennsylvania. And I started a business. My wife and I were the only two people in that business in the beginning. We rented a one-bedroom apartment to start that out. And I look back on it today because I'm removed from it. It was a blessing and it was a curse at the same time, because that business just took off exponentially. And we went from a two-bedroom apartment to offices in five cities in the US. And we went from two of us to 60 of us. And I had no God, of course, remember that. So I was the director and I was the mover and the shaker. And our business wasn't an easy business. We didn't have a product that we would sell one time and collect the revenue from sales. Our product was our imagination. We were a creative marketing firm, and we would come up with ideas for companies to bring their products to market. We would name the product sometimes, and we would create the TV ads, the videos, the music, the everything to bring that product to market for these companies. And we got some pretty good notoriety. So we grew really quickly. But we were up against a lot of companies that were bigger and smarter than us. So I was always reminded that we're only as good as our next idea. If we couldn't come up with the ideas, we wouldn't last very long. But we lasted for 20 years. And I was in heaven, I'll admit it, with that business. It was life in the fast lane. And I just thoroughly enjoyed that. That became kind of a God to me. So I gave it my all. I gave it my best. The problem was I wasn't home very often. Maybe 20% of the time I was home. 80% of the time I was flying around on airplanes, going to meetings, going to studios, shooting commercials, recording new songs, that type of thing. So it was fun. It really was a fun business. I'd rather do that than almost anything else. But we could be closed out in a second. We're only as good as our next idea. If we didn't have that idea, we wouldn't last very long. So it was that kind of pressure on me during that time. That lasted 20 years. So I did that life. I had that life for 20 years. When I came home, and I call it that because I wasn't home that often, when I came home for good, if you will, my wife was an alcoholic. I had no clue this was going to happen. Of course, I could fix it because that's what I did. I couldn't fix it. I couldn't fix it. I came up against the first time in my life that I was powerless. You know, I just had a whole life telling me otherwise, but I was powerless and my life was unmanageable. I went to Al-Anon, and Al-Anon told me, I couldn't fix her, but I had to work on myself. I had to learn to let go. I had to learn to accept the way things were for me, no matter if I liked them or not. And I loved Al-Anon. I got a lot of friends out of Al-Anon. I did everything that Al-Anon asked me to do, sponsor people, read the literature, do the steps, et cetera, do service. So I'm still there. It was 18 years. I'm still in Al-Anon. But I never came to believe. And I didn't even know it. I just ignored it. No God was in my life prior to this. So why do it now? Al-Anon didn't convince me that I had to do this, that I had to do step two and step three. They just didn't convince me. So I turned out to be miserable all the time. I started being angry with my alcoholic. Then I was just miserable because I learned how codependent I was with her. I had a serious codependency problem and I never knew it existed. But so I was miserable and I was, I developed friends in Al-Anon and they felt so sorry for me. They'd take me out to dinner and I had moved out of the house. You know, living with an alcoholic is too much for most of us. So I had moved out and I had an apartment in this town and they'd take me to dinner and they say, how are you doing? And so on and so forth. So one day they said, we're going for a road trip on a sunny Saturday. And we went to a place called Lilydale in New York State. And Lilydale is a spiritual retreat. And it's pretty well known all over the world. And there are seance people there and there are people that read your aura. And Deepak Chopra was speaking that day. So they were setting up a stage for him. It was outdoors. And I was standing around with my friends and they said, why don't you get a reading? And I didn't even know what a reading was. So a reading became a fact that I sat in a chair outdoors on this beautiful day. And with my eyes closed, this young woman read my aura. And the way she read my aura is to put her hands close to me, close to my head, spend a lot of time up there, 2-3 inches away, my heart, you know, my body. And I just sat there with my eyes closed. But I wasn't oblivious to what was happening to me. Something was happening to me. It's a little difficult for me to get through with this. So at the end of her reading, she bent over to me and whispered in my ear, God bless you. And I couldn't remember anybody ever saying, God bless you, in my 20 years of business, in my years before that. I couldn't remember it. And I just lost it. Tears running down. Somebody said, God bless you. So that was an awakening. I realized that was my first awakening. And so I came back to Al-Anon and I reapplied myself, but I didn't quite get there yet. So I had a second awakening experience. I came home from a meeting in Al-Anon. This is maybe a year later. And I sat on my back porch. I live in Colorado and I'm in the foothills. So every view is a beautiful view. I'm looking at a beautiful view and I'm thinking to myself, what's the harm in having faith? Why don't I have faith? Who am I hurting? I'm not hurting myself. This is up to me, you know, to have faith in the first place so I could allow something else in my life. And I'm not hurting my family. I'm not hurting anyone else. Meanwhile, my son was a pretty severe alcoholic at the same time. So I was pretty desperate at that time. And Al-Anon, no fault of their own, didn't get me to that spiritual place I needed to be. But God sent me a messenger. And we had a speaker one Saturday morning, and the speaker was from BBA. And she never said she was from BBA. Because she was an Al-Anon person and she only talked about Al-Anon, but she told me what was wrong with me. No one ever said that before. I was a stress addict. I was an adrenaline addict. I was a controller. I was a fixer. I was a chaos creator. And I never knew it till this person told me that was my problem. That was my addiction. And there were probably 100 people in our Zoom meeting at that time. And I looked around and there were, because it was my meeting, it was my home group and I was the GR and I was kind of running that meeting. And everybody, 50 of us were scribbling like crazy, when this person was talking to us, and I was one of them.
And sorry, 5 minutes to go.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm going to move more quickly here if I can. So 5 minutes after that, she said bbaworks.com. So I went there the next day to a noon meeting, and the rest is history. So I've been through the BBA program. In fact, October is my emotional sobriety date month, if you will. So my favorite chapter in this book is We Agnostics. And the things I learned in this book, they took me from scratch to a believer. I am now a believer, and I am a user and a goer to of God. So I'd like to quote two things on the pages you gave me to speak on. On page 47, this is step two. I need to ask myself one short question. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as I can say that, I do believe, or am willing to believe, I am emphatically assured that I am on my way. It has been repeatedly proven among us upon this simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. And I did that little trip. And on page 50, step three, here are thousands of men and women, worldly indeed. One of them is me. I can flatly declare that since I have come to believe in a power greater than myself, to take certain attitude toward the power, and do certain simple things, there has been a revolutionary change in my way of living and thinking. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure, I found that a new power, a new peace, a new happiness, a new sense of direction flowed into me. This happened soon after I wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. And that's what BBA taught me. And that's where I am today. I'm recovered in many ways, but I've learned about other things I still need to work on. And I'm not there yet. But I'm a heck of a lot closer than I used to be. So thank you. I'm Tal.
Thank you so much, Tal. Wonderful to have you in the meeting here. And I'll go ahead now and stop that recording.